Welcome, everyone. I am Diana Plopa, the associate publisher for Grey Wolf Publishing, sitting in today for Zachary Wolf, our book ambassador. With me today is Carol O'Shadless. She is the author of Death and Other Lies. So we're going to start today with Carol reading a section from her novel, and then we will have a short interview and open up the floor for questions and discussion. So Carol, take it away.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. Give you a little bit of background. It's a story about a good man, a scientist, and his life is shattered when he becomes an innocent pawn in a deadly game of espionage. In the war on terrorism, Matt Arrington is expendable. He's an acceptable collateral damage. His only crime is falling in love with a beautiful woman. We'll start. Kate, I'm home. Kate. Matt Arrington was barely inside the door of his apartment in a suburb of Philadelphia before the load in his arms spilled over. Damn, he cursed as an avalanche of bills and junk mail hit the floor. His irritation was immediate but short-lived. He even forgave the key, which was stuck in the lock and threatened to break as he wiggled it out. He hoped Kate was ready. It had been a long day in the lab and there wouldn't be much time to get to the arena before the Flyers game started. If they were late, it would mean a smelly shuttle ride from the overflow lot, but none of that mattered. Nothing was going to ruin his good mood or the evening he had planned. He patted his pocket for the small velvet box, and a boyish grin split his face as he pictured the romantic dinner he had planned. He only feared she would think it was too soon. Carefully balancing his briefcase and laptop, he nudged the door shut with his shoulder and dumped everything on a table. As he stooped to retrieve the mess, he yelled again for Kate, but still no sweet voice echoed back. Matt knew Kate should have been home hours before, but the apartment was cold, dark, quiet, and uneasy. It wasn't like her to be late. An inner alarm poked him, but he shook it off, and in his logical fashion, he listed several possible reasons why she was not there. Regardless, he was a bit piqued. She hadn't called. She should know he would worry. And he reached to turn on the lamp. Nothing in his logical voice, in his logical life, prepared him for what he saw. Like a punch to the gut, it nearly doubled him over. The difference to his home was dramatic. White slits of light poured through the mini blinds and settled on the pale walls. Immediately, his pallor blanched to match theirs. A quick sweep of the room forced the air from his lungs. The fear he had kept in check for months had come true. The dream ended. All of Kate's things were gone. She had left him. Her laptop, her soft rug, her knickknacks, all gone. So were her pretty watercolor prints of graceful old homes on the eastern seacoast. And back in their place were his old posters, immature and lifeless. The blue sweater he usually flung over the chair, her raincoat on the hook, and the slippers she left by the door were all gone. Every sign of her was gone. Matt's eyes clenched shut and he fought to get air. He knew he shouldn't jump to painful conclusions, but what other answer was there? Would she actually leave him like this, without warning, without an explanation? Slowly, he studied the room again, stark and functional. How had he lived like this before Kate? No color or warmth. In just a few weeks, she had filled it with energy, brought it to life. She made it a home. On a Sunday afternoon after she moved in, they found an art festival in the park. In a small tent, a young man was selling offerings made of metal, wood, and clay. A typical starving artist, Matt had laughingly called him, a ragamuffin in ill-fitting clothes. Man's hair, long hair blew wild about his face. Kate must have seen something in indefinable objects that he was selling. When she asked Matt, what do you think? He thought they were ugly, but he let her pick two. The twisted forms which took up residence on an end table were now gone as well. In their place lay several old issues of a scientific journal spread out on the table, each with a slight coating of dust. Pain, sharp as a saber, pierced him as he swung around to face an empty window. Kate collected small glass vases, and her favorite was cobalt blue. Matt felt terrible the day he chipped it by accident, and he's turned it around so she wouldn't notice. She kept them all on a windowsill where they caught the early afternoon sun as through a prism and a carnival colors danced upon the walls. Bile rose in his throat. Life without Kate would be as bleak and bare again as the dusty ledge in front of him. His apartment's decor had always been functional but simple. The one piece of furniture with a character was a desk from the 1800s. It had nooks and crannies, a great workspace, and a secret panel in a false bottom drawer. When he purchased it from the antique shop down on the boulevard, he knew it would be a great place for the work he brought home nightly. When Kate moved in, he pushed everything off to the side and cleared the surface for her laptop. Impossible, but once again, the top overflowed with an unsightly stack of papers all waiting to be sorted. How? With painful clarity, he remembered the day Kate tackled the mess and filed his papers methodically. The pigeonholes she filled were empty, and her computer was gone. In the middle of the floor were three red drops that looked like blood. Maybe she hurt herself and left to get care. That would be an answer, but then what of her things? Or did someone else hurt her, take her away? That didn't seem plausible. No, as much as he wanted to deny it, the answer was obvious. Fear, as unstoppable as an incoming tide, yanked him back to the unacceptable. He always knew he didn't deserve her. Now she knew it too. Each room contributed more to his loss. Memories of the past flashed like lightning during a storm. Kate curled like a cat reading a book. Kate seductively smiling over a glass of wine. Kate dancing to the music of her laptop. Each memory pushed the hurt deeper. 3 days earlier, he had jogged 3 blocks to a small market and bought her a huge bunch of sunflowers. They no longer adorned the table. Instead, only his cold coffee cup left as he left it that morning when he walked out the door. He frantically searched for any remaining sign, but there was nothing left. There was no visible sign of Kate. A wisp of her fragrance lingered sunburned on his jacket, and he turned his head to catch it again. Its sweet feminine essence tantalized him all day. Just thinking about the past morning made his knees feel weak, and he clutched the chair for support. He tried to leave for work that morning and headed for the door, but a backward glance at the soft shape buried in the bedclothes drew him back to her. She was still asleep in their bed. A curl lay gently on her cheek, and a shapely leg poked out from the covers. Just one small kiss to her forehead was all he wanted, and he planted one as softly as he could, breathing in her scent. But as he straightened again to go, Kate stirred, grabbed the front of his jacket, and pulled his body back down to hers. The look on her face told him he was going to be late for work. It was unusual for them to make love in the morning, and while he fleetingly wondered why today was different, the unexpectedness of it made it all the more sweet. Within minutes, the warm bed and her soft limbs ensnared him, and he completely forgot about the time. They made love quickly, urgently, two souls fused in a timeless dance. Their combined breaths held the promise of everything and forever. The air around them was electrically charged, expectant, and the room was aglow with early morning light. He kissed her eyes and was surprised to find them wet. He hated to leave, to let her go. Her scent kept him spellbound. Eternity could have come and gone, and Matt was content to let it pass him by if he could stay by her side forever. Kate was everything he would ever want or need, and it took all of his willpower to climb back out of the bed. And it was several minutes before he could get his head acclimated to the real world, the one without her, the one outside the door. As he finally made his exit that morning, she softly called goodbye. He blew her one more kiss and quietly closed the door behind him. It was now 10 hours later, and Matt was dreading the final blow. He tried to stop his feet, but they moved of their own accord. The bedroom was only a few steps away, yet his heart pounded, and he was out of breath. Little was changed, except when he last walked out the door, she was still there, half asleep, in their bed. The bed was unmade, but there was not a single wrinkle in the smooth pillow to prove it ever cradled her sweet blonde head. With each discovery, the magnitude of his loss mounted and made him physically ill. Forced to sit down until the nausea passed, he perched tentatively on the end of the bed, afraid to get too close to her side, as if it would invade her space and invalidate her ownership. He hadn't deserved her, he knew it all along, and now he would pay for his folly. Irrational as it was, he continued the search for his shattered dreams. If only he could find the missing piece to the madness that had become his home, perhaps he could save himself from the agony that was wrapping itself around his heart. There was no need to continue to search, he knew it was useless, but he couldn't stop. Room by room, drawer by drawer, hoping in some deep inner place some sense could be found, some logic to make it all right again, but no such salvation was forthcoming. Inspection of the closets was anticlimactic. Like everything else, like her other possessions, her clothes were gone and only his remained, spaced out like the pickets of a fence in measured cadence. Drawers, too, were fully occupied as if they never shared their home at all. On inspection, he was stunned to discover his worn gray sweatshirt folded neatly near the bottom. It was Kate who had convinced him it had to be thrown away, and he laughingly agreed. So how could it be there, secure in its place as it always was, even though he remembered the day she took it to the trash? Only his toothbrush and toiletries remained just as he left them. Even the towel she usually chose, the deep blue one, which matched her eyes, mocked him as it hung clean and unused. Words like a refrain from a song repeated over and over in his head. It's as if she was never here. Logic is on my side, he argued. There has been no clue she was unhappy. Didn't she make sweet love to me this morning? But the doubts he buried for years that he didn't deserve to be happy snickered at him, climbed up out of his past, and played havoc with his heart. How had I failed her? He wanted answers. He needed answers. Repeatedly, he called her cell phone and listened to it ring and ring and ring, then finally go dead. No message came on in Kate's melodic voice instructing callers to leave her voicemail. Unable to reach her phone, he looked up the number where she worked. Atlas Medical, how may I direct your call? Hello, I've been trying to reach my girlfriend, Kate Champion. Her cell phone isn't working, and I hope you can help me reach her. I'm sorry, sir, we don't have anyone listed for that name. Kate Champion? Maybe she's listed under Catherine. She's in sales and handles the Philadelphia area. I'm sorry, we don't have anyone like that. Well, perhaps you have the wrong company. There's other several medical sales. No, I am not wrong. I need to talk to her. Please transfer me to your supervisor. Okay, if you wish, but it won't help. Matt's long fingers drummed a tattoo on the desktop. This is Tom Barrett. How can I help you? Mr. Barrett, I'm trying to reach one of your employees, Kate Champion. Your operator can't even find her name. Look, I'm sorry, but she doesn't work for Atlas. The operator, my wife actually, was correct. We're a small business. There's only 22 people. Maybe you have the wrong company. I know I don't. I'm sure I don't. Is there another company with a similar name? Nope, sorry. Matt's head pounded and his stomach roiled. He knew he wasn't mistaken. He was sure she had told him Atlas Medical. Was it possible I got the wrong name? Maybe she lied. Minutes went by, maybe hours. Agony clouded time. Perhaps the police should be notified. A shudder went through him that Kate could be in trouble. Is it selfish to hope there's another explanation, that she hasn't really left me? Could any answer be better, make her disappearance hurt less? Shaking his head to clear such forbidden thoughts, he reached for the phone. He needed someone to help him make sense of what he had found, but reality made him hesitate. What am I going to tell them? If she had left on her own, what can they do? But what if she didn't? What if someone took her? But then who would have put up my old things? And why? Again, the questions and doubts came back full circle. What about the blood? It's only 3 drops, but what does it mean? If she loves me, why would she leave me? And if she doesn't, couldn't she have left a note? It's not like her to be cruel. So many whys with no answers. He didn't know if talking to the police would help, but at least it was action, and he needed to do something besides stare at the 4 walls, which chose to keep their silence. Is this an emergency? A woman asked when Matt dialed the local police. I don't know. Yes, it could be. When I got home, I discovered my girlfriend was gone. She just disappeared. All of her things are gone, too. The voice answered routinely. Was there any sign of violence or foul play? Well, yeah, sort of. I found some blood. She could be hurt. I don't know why she would leave on her own. What's your name? Matt Arrington. Listen, Mr. Arrington, we're pretty short-staffed right now. Why don't you come down to the station and we can talk? Like a shot of brandy, heated blood pulsed through Matt's veins. The relief was overwhelming. They would help him. The police would know how to find her. On the road, Matt attempted to put together a report in his head, trying to make some sense where there was none. He couldn't explain what happened, but he didn't want to sound like an idiot. The clock on the dash showed 7:30, about the time the hockey game was about to start. What a waste of money those tickets were, he decided, closely followed by the self-castrating remorse. Geez, what a horrible thought to have right now. He couldn't believe something like that even entered his head. Kate was gone, and he had no idea what happened to her, and he was worried about losing money on tickets. What a schmuck he could be. Still berating himself, Matt pulled into the parking lot of the police station, and immediately old terrors washed over him. Terrors he had buried for many years after his mother died. The horrific memories of the dark days of his past were forcefully kept in the back of his mind, imprisoned in the shadows. Like paper cuts on the soul which never quite healed, they were occasionally snagged by life and ripped back open. Matt was surrounded by patrol cars. The sight of their blue and red lights tested the dam that kept the horrors at bay. He saw cop cars every day with no great relapse, but tonight, stunned by what he found, their presence threatened to undo more than a decade of pills and therapy. Matt tried to control the trembling that made his hands shake as he put the car in park. He had come so far from that time. His heart pounded, and he could feel the muscles in his chest painfully contract. Control it, he ordered aloud. He remembered the voices of the doctors and their calming advice. Focus on better things. Good thoughts, memories. He took a deep, ragged breath, held it for 10 seconds, and let it pass. The pulse slowed, and the attack lessened. It was especially hard this time to focus on better thoughts and good memories when all those things centered on Kate. The one thing the years had taught him was to face forward with logic. Logic and facts had rescued him in the difficult times and armed him well as he carved out his career as a scientist. They were the bedrock upon which he built his life, his guide to the future. That's what he needed now, calm, rational logic. But calm he was not. After the accident and his mother's death, his history with police was knotted with pain and loss. There was so much he fought to keep buried. The thought of opening up all the old feelings again nearly made him turn the car around towards home. Panic almost won. But Kate's face floated before him. Her blue eyes sparkled and her smile dazzled. He just knew the love was there, and this time he could help. Keep going, he said out loud. She is worth whatever it takes to find her. Matt stepped out of the car while the chimes reminded him to take his forgotten keys. A chill wind blew up his back and a light rain began to fall. He hugged his jacket tighter, and somewhere in the distance, an ambulance raced through the streets, its siren clearing the way. A shiver went through him, worried it could have something to do with Kate, and he prayed it did not. He headed toward the heavy glass doors, etched with police and bold block letters. If he must, he would surrender his soul to find her, or at least to find out why she left.
done.
Thank you.
Nice. So that was chapter one.
And none of the book, the rest of the book is like it.
So that was chapter one of Death and Other Lies.
Right.
How did you get the inspiration for this story?
That's a very good question, because it took 11 years to write it. At least I started 11 years ago. So by the time I got around to finishing up, it had changed its direction many, many times. So there really was no plot to begin with. It just started out of the story that I wrote. I think it was originally a love story. And then the characters take on their own life.
So where did you get the initial idea? Was it just something floating around in your head? Did you see something in the news that stimulated the thought?
No, I've told you before, the characters tell me what they want to write. I really do hear voices in my head, and I tell people it's not the scary kind that make you do horrible things. It's the kind that just have conversations, and all of a sudden you tap into somebody saying, a conversation, and you just pick up on that, and from there you try. I've always been a people watcher, and I love to watch people, and I try to imagine what their lives are like, and where they're going, what they're doing, and what they say, and when you're eavesdropping at people.
You find yourself eavesdropping at restaurants?
And I'm not. I make up conversations that they're having, and so that's probably where
I think we all spend some time making up stuff.
Yeah, we do.
About the people we encounter throughout our lives.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it.
So tell us a little bit about your process. Are you an outliner?
Do you
just write as it flows? How do you do this?
Completely write as it flows. It's what the characters, and I have tried to do outlines. I really tried, and people say that's the way to go. You want to know from the beginning and end and the middle. And I've tried that, and it doesn't work, because the characters don't go where I want them to go. And the story doesn't go where I want it to go, and I will argue with them sometimes that this is how you're supposed to be, but they don't listen.
Yeah, no, rarely do they listen.
They just don't listen. So most of the characters have their own mind.
That's very true. And very true. I've spoken with you about this in the past. That you might have other stories in this genre floating around into your head. Do you think there might be a sequel?
Could this turn into a series? There's two more.
Two more?
And they're both in the works, and they're in various stages, but I get distracted very easily. I think I have a very high distractibility factor, and I go off on tangents, and in the meantime, I'll write a comedy, or I'll write something else, and in the meantime, the children's book, so I get very distracted.
Okay.
And again, it's whatever the voices in my head say, and I'll be in the middle of writing one, and they'll just say, where did that conversation come from? And I'm off. Okay.
Unless we have further discussion with Carol, I think we'll give you some time to meet and greet with the people that are here. And Evelyn is sitting back at our table, and she would be happy to help facilitate book sales today. We do take credit cards, and cash is always available. Also, one more thing I want to let you know about. We just recently started a new feature on our website, Book Club Discussion Questions. So when you go to the website and you notice the book club discussion question icon, you can download for free a PDF of 10 questions for your book club to enjoy. We offer book clubs discount on books if they would like to order them in lots of 10 or more. So that's an option for you if you're a member of a book club. So Carol, yours is the third book to be brought into this new program, so there are book discussion questions on the website for you.
We have one next week.
Okay. So thank you, Carol, for coming.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it, and we will be back with our next segment in just a few minutes.
What?